I think if you don't feel strongly about the idea, you should give up. Because the truth is that I think with all entrepreneurs and in all verticals, you're going to get a lot of no's. And even after you get your first yes, you're going to get a series of no to your before you get your next yes. And we are still getting some no's now. And I believe for every single company out there, it's the same. So I think what keeps us going is really believing that this is the right thing to do. And for us, going back to first principles, you know, people need this, right? You know, and people really do want this. And hence, we are creating it and making it available. So I think tying this back also to ensure that you are working on a problem that's huge enough, that can create a big enough impact, would then result in a compelling business case that's investable.
Hi, this is Eric here, and you're listening to Hashtag Highly Sought After. Are you an entrepreneur with a great idea and you're hoping to win over your investors, customers, and distributors? If so, you will love this week's episode as my guest did just that. His name is Alan Pua, a food tech entrepreneur and a CEO and co-founder of Alchemy Food Tech, a disruptive food and biotech startup who is helping to make meals healthier without compromising on taste. Thus far, they have raised over $4.5 million from private investors and even Enterprise Singapore, a government agency. Within their first year of operation, Alchemy has served over 7.4 million meals and have established relationships with leading food brands like Boon Tong Kee, the number one chicken brand in Singapore, Gardenia, the number one bread brand in Singapore, and Sui Heng, my favorite, the number one bakery in Singapore. So if you want to learn how you can win over your investors, customers, and distributors while impacting millions, you've got to pay special attention to this food tech episode. Thank you so much. Hello. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
And thanks for bringing some yummy food over today.
I hope you will like it later.
Yeah, we're going to do some food tasting. Now, I have a question for you. You're in a food tech business, so why not let's start with this fun question, okay?
Yeah.
If you can describe yourself using food, what food would you use?
My favorite food is chicken rice. I would definitely use chicken rice because it is the food that I miss the most when I travel. Mm. The first thing that I want to eat when I come back. And it was also one of the first projects that I hope to work on. And really, I think it's a comfort food of Singaporeans, and I'm a typical Singaporean, and eating is our favorite pastime. So I think, you know, this really comes back to, you know, the whole essence, you know, of trying to empower people to still enjoy the food that they eat, you know, and that's
very nice.
What I
love the plug-in. Well, those of you who are listening to us on podcasts or you're watching us on YouTube, you know, let us know in the comment section, what is your favorite food? Okay. If you can describe yourself using a food, what would you use? It'd be a very cool way to get to know you. Now, I want to check out your history, right? You founded Soyoto with your wife, right? And then 7 years, Soyoto is essentially, you're helping to make sure that we're eating dairy or ice cream.
The whole point about Soyoto was to have a low calorie ice cream because we love eating ice cream, but we didn't want to grow fat. So,
okay. Ice cream lovers, please listen, right? So you started with that. Yeah. And then after that, you went to Alchemy and your job was to make sure that we enjoy eating our favorite food like bread, noodles, cakes. You know, without the bad effects of it.
Exactly.
So there seems to be a common trend here.
Yes.
A common pattern, right? Yeah. It's all our favorite food, but yet they have harmful effects. Yes. And you're helping it to make it healthier for us.
Yes.
Why? Why that motivation?
So for many fronts, I mean, I'm a foodie at heart. So I love to eat, but I don't want to die. You know, and I don't want to get ill health or put on weight. And I realized that a lot of times the existing options out there are really painful choices. You know, it's either you giving up your favorite food or you eating some substitute that doesn't satisfy you at all. And then suddenly life is not worth living. Because at least for me, you know, I live to eat.
Yeah, a lot of foodies will relate to you.
Yeah. So if you know, me staying well means me being miserable in other sense, then it's not a perfect solution at all. And then for us, you know, in the Alchemy story, there was a much closer reason, you know, much closer to my heart reason why we got started on this. It's really because both my grandmothers, they passed away due to diabetes complications. And my mom has 6 siblings. 5 of them are diabetic, type 2 diabetic. Yeah, you know, so growing up, I had a lot of personal experiences watching people struggle to stay healthy by staying away from their favorite foods. And one particular experience that really stuck with me all these years is my aunt. Once she was supposed to go to a doctor's and have a blood drawn to, you know, measure her blood sugar levels, she basically lied flat out, you know, to the doctors and say that, you know, oh, I have a phobia for needles. Can I give you my urine samples instead? So she went to the washroom. She diluted her urine samples with water just to cheat the test. And so the result don't look like it's the condition's getting out of control. And then so we will leave her alone to, you know, still eat her favorite white rice, drink her sugar coffee and things like that. But cheating on a test is a short-term thing, right? You know, the complications are always going to come back. But that left a very deep imprint in me that it's extremely difficult for people to do the right thing in terms of staying away from their favorite foods. Even though nobody wants to be sick, right? And when it comes to things like diabetes, you know, the complications are really dire. You're talking about amputation, kidney failure, blindness, things that nobody will ever want to have. But every single day, every single meal, giving out your favorite food, extremely difficult. So, you know, that's why we felt, since we have a background in food technology, you know, my wife and co-founder, she's a food scientist by training. So we're thinking, why don't we use this domain knowledge, create a solution so that people can still enjoy their favorite foods, but in a safe manner, they don't get the health implications.
You know, I feel that we're just only about 3 minutes in the interview. You have already won everyone listening to you. You obviously have won me. I mean, you know, the standard health advice that people always give you is to restrain, is to cut.
Yes.
Right? But it's very difficult to change old habits.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. It's the same thing with cigarettes, right? We know that cigarettes are bad for us, but you know, it's very difficult to cut it. So first of all, on behalf of everybody listening and watching, I want to thank you for making it possible for us to enjoy our food. Okay, so let's go to the science of it first, shall we? And then after that, we go into the marketing and investing. How do you first came out with it? Okay, you kind of had a motivation, yeah. But was it difficult to find a formula, you know, to be able to allow us to enjoy rice?
Yeah, so it started with a mission to want to make staple foods healthier, right? Mm. But, you know, before that, there were a lot of approaches they can do it. For example, you can go into biotechnology, you go into hybridization or gene editing of crops, you know, to maybe grow a healthier rice. But then we did a scope, right? Mainly my co-founder, the CTO. So we did a scope of the land. We were thinking about the various approaches that we can do this. Of course, if you were to go into biotechnology, you might end up with a rice that's healthier. But what we found was that one of the biomakeup is it's a little bit technical. It's what we call the amylose and amylopectin ratio. So when you try to reduce the glycemic index of rice through biotechnology, you will always end up changing the taste and the texture of the rice. This was a very strong conclusion. And that was a flat out no that, you know, the final solution should still preserve the taste of the food because otherwise there will be no adoption.
So, okay, I'm going to ask you a very noob question, yeah. Right? I heard about, you know, us reducing sugar, that actually a lot of issues that happen is because we have too much sugar.
Yeah.
Can you share the science behind it? Why is sugar bad for us?
Yeah, so sugar and high glycemic index foods, right, basically refers to glucose that's being released from the food. And when this glucose enters our bloodstream and we don't get rid of the sugar fast enough, it increases the viscosity of the blood. So the blood doesn't flow as smoothly in our vessels. So over a long period of time, you know, it can lead to toxin deposit. And over a super long period of time, you know, we're talking about decades down the road, right? You know, it's going to lead to clots. And then that's why a lot of diabetic patients, they start to go blind because the clot happens in the eye. Yeah, when it happens in the toes, some of them go for amputation. And then there are other implications like stroke as well, which is why it's extremely important, I think, for everybody to regulate their blood sugar levels, whether you're a healthy individual or you're really diabetic.
Got it. So a lot of food that we eat, like formerly ice cream, or cakes, or even the standard rice and noodles, which is carbs, right?
Yes.
All that has glucose or it releases sugar.
Correct.
And high amount of sugar in our bloodstream.
That is correct. And actually, what we have also realized, because we do have consulting endocrinologists, you know, that helps us with our work.
Correct.
Is that our body needs glucose. Our brain feeds primarily on glucose.
Yeah.
All our cells require glucose to function. But what our bodies can't handle is the sudden influx. So we're regulating it. The release of the glucose from the food so that we get enough to get by for the cells to function, but we give our body more time to get rid of the glucose.
And is that what alchemy fiber does?
Exactly, yeah.
So alchemy fiber doesn't remove the glucose release.
Yeah, it slows it down, yes.
I see.
Yeah, because again, coming from the advice that we sought from the clinicians, they were saying that, you know, if you don't have enough glucose in your system, you're going to need the hypoglycemia, you can faint.
Yeah, because it's energy source, right?
Exactly. You need the energy. We just can't deal with the sudden influx.
I see. Oh, now, thank you. Okay, because I study computing. I have no idea about food tech. Got it. So now we understand how it works. So let me recap, right? So number one is all this food produce sugar in our bloodstream.
Yes.
And the reason why sugar is bad, it's not because sugar is bad, but it's because the high influx of sugar is what causes a lot of problems for us. So if we can slowly release that sugar in our bloodstream, then actually we can enjoy all this food.
Yes.
And a lot of options that is available back then during your time requires modification of taste or texture, right? But if we're going to, that's the reason why some of us don't like brown rice, right?
92% of people refuse to eat brown rice.
Yeah, because number one, it's brown. Number two, the texture.
Yeah.
It's like eating sandpaper, you know, it's just rough.
It's very rough.
Yeah. So I get it now. So when you came out, when your wife and you came out with this idea, right, and you make it work, how do you feel when you first discover it? Do you like shout out, Eureka? You know?
Yeah, so it was this discovery and the research process was 3 years.
Ooh.
Yeah, so we researched a lot into different type of fibers that we get from different plant crops, you know, from corn, pea, legumes, tapioca, all kinds of different plant crops. we researched a lot into the characteristics of each fiber. And then we realized that we have to form a fiber blend. It cannot be just one source of fiber in order to deliver both the no change in taste and also to slow down the GI of the product. And then when we first discovered it, we have the hunch. We are in the lab. It shows that it works. But, you know, the truth is really in the pudding when you have this tested in human body. So we have already done to date 5 rounds of human clinical studies. So basically, we give them rice and then we measure blood sugar. We give them rice with alkaline fiber and we measure the blood sugar, you know, over 2 days. And it was consistently shown that when you have rice with alkaline fiber, it will elicit a slower glucose response.
And they didn't even know that that was exactly. Rice with that alkaline fiber.
And that was when we know for sure we have something that works.
Okay, now, so we kind of speed up already, but let's slow it down a little bit. So when you first came out, when you thought about this idea, how do you end up having a lab even to do all this experiment? Don't you need some funding?
Yeah, we need funding. We didn't build our own lab even when we got our first round of funding. So our first round of funding came from the Singapore government. It was a technology research grant called Technology Enterprise Commercialization Schemes. Very mouthful.
Most important is money.
Yeah, the most important is money.
Money for the government to help you create this tech.
Today is renamed as the Startup SG Tech Grant. So it's a highly competitive deep tech research grant. Criteria is that it has to be deep tech. It has to have potential to go really big, you know, internationally. So we show that diabetes is a global problem. And by the way, a little bit of background on the diabetes problem, right? Today, there are more diabetic patients than active Amazon users. And you think Amazon has a lot of users, which is true. There's even more diabetics.
Oh, wow.
And then there are a pool of people who are about to become diabetic, which is called the pre-diabetics. And then there are the regular people that we have to protect to ensure they don't join that pool. So this mission is very big. And hence, when we pitched for the grant, you know, we presented these facts, you know, it became overwhelmingly obvious that this is a project that we should work on. And even though it was a very competitive grant, only about 7 to 8 companies receive on a yearly basis. And this is not only open to startups, it's open to companies of all sizes and age.
Who wants to do some research.
Exactly. It has to be deep tech. Yeah. So we were funded for, initially under that grant. We chose not to build our own lab because it's the fastest way to burn through the money.
Yes.
So we rented the lab in the National University of Singapore, NUS.
Okay. First of all, I didn't even know you can rent a lab, but that's very cool to know that.
It's not publicly offered as a service. It's just that as alumni, my partner, Valinch, is an alumni. So, you know, we have a good relationship with them and they're very, very helpful and supportive. So we asked, can we rent, you know, because otherwise we have no money to build one.
Yes.
And then we also had some professors work on the project. We have some FYP students, which we paid for out of the grant. Yeah.
Wow.
So we can stretch the research dollars.
That's awesome. Okay. So let's go back to the emotion, right? Remember we talked about the eureka moment. Yeah. So when you and your wife realized that this is something really cool. Obviously, it was only a hypothesis, right?
Exactly.
And so you pitched the idea.
Yeah.
And you got a fund.
Yes.
You're one of the 7 or 8 companies that got it. How do you feel, you and your wife, how do you feel when you got the yes?
We felt really, really thankful, especially, you know, for deep tech startups at the very first stage, you have a hunch of something that might change the world, but you don't have the proof, right?
And it's just a hunch.
It's just a hunch, exactly. So it's a very difficult proposition to sell to private investors. If you go to an investor and say, look, I have an idea, it can solve and change the lives of millions, but I'm not sure whether it works, give me the money.
It's like Shark Tank, right? I have a hunch.
It's like, I have a hunch, that's it. You know, I have no proof. I cannot guarantee it works. Can you give me some money? It's going to be a very hard sell.
So tell us, how do you manage to sell a hunch?
Yeah, so by the time we got to the pitch, right, for the grant, we already had our first prototype that was done up. So people were eating the prototype. So we had these experiments done at home.
Very smart.
I would say that based on certain literature research, this is an idea that possibly could work. We do not know. We need funds to do the research, but at least in terms of tasting, in terms of physical samples, we have already managed to produce it. So you can taste it to believe it, but if you can prove the clinical efficacy and we can scale up production, for sure you can see that.
So you already had a working prototype. Actually, your wife was able to create a fiber.
I wouldn't call it a working prototype then, but it was a first draft of a prototype because we still had to prove that it works.
Okay. And back then when you did it, there was no impact to the taste. It tastes the same.
Yes.
And yet it was able to slow down the glucose release.
That was what we believe based on the literature research that we've done and what we use to formulate in our product. But again, the truth is when you really conduct clinical studies, which is what we needed the grant for.
Got it. So the way you sell it was, number one, there's a very big problem that you can solve. Number two is that there was a little bit of testing. Because I think the biggest objection back then was, is it going to affect the taste?
Yes. And also whether it works. So many big questions to answer. The taste, at least upfront, try it. You can know for sure. And then the clinical part is where we needed the funds as well as the time.
Got it. And then, of course, you did a smaller version of it and you just needed a scale.
Yeah.
So very good. And I'm asking you this question because there are a lot of entrepreneurs listening to this episode. And obviously, we have a lot of ideas. But the question is, are we able to interest an investor to, you know, to listen to us? So what I'm hearing from you is if we sell them a big enough a problem, right, exciting enough a problem to solve, right, you will be able to attract their resources. And obviously, hopefully a prototype.
Yes.
Right. Okay, good. So you were you happy when you got that yes?
Very, very happy because I truly believe that you become something big because people love to eat, right? The concept of tasty, healthy carbs, you know, is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Yeah, even at the very get-go, I knew that, you know, I strongly believed it was going to be a no-brainer, but it was really about making it happen. That was the question mark, and, you know, we need funds to make it happen. So when we had the first major believer and a patron, which is the Singapore government through Enterprise Singapore, really, really, really happy.
Got it. Sometimes we just need a believer, right? So tell us a little bit about where has Alchemy Fiber, which is that fiber you created that allow our carbs to release sugar slowly, but yet it tastes good, right? Where has it been added?
Yeah, so right now this is being served in major restaurant brands. So I think you mentioned the likes of Pudongki, you know, the largest chicken rice chain store in Singapore. Right now they serve in every outlet, every single serving. So it's a default. In fact, you cannot even opt out. Yeah, it's the same in other restaurants like All Yuki Specialty Duck Rice chain store, all the outlets and all the servings.
Chicken rice, duck rice, gardenia bread, it's on our bread, noodles.
Noodles, we have restaurant partners such as Dumpling Darlings that mix ramen with Alchemy Fiber. So give you the same great taste, but without the sugar shock to the system. So basically anything carbs, you know.
And today in our studio, Alan has brought something really interesting. Can you tell us what you brought?
Yeah, so today I brought one of our partner products, which is a sugar-free chiffon cake from Sui Hing.
Can you guys just listen? Do you hear what he just said? He said sugar-free cake. It's like cake, sugar-free, who will eat it?
Yeah, it's for a long time, we know that sugar-free cakes is a major fantasy and one of various people. It's just that anyone skilled in baking will also know that when you remove sugar from cake and replace it with just sweeteners, you're going to end up with problems. The cake's going to become drier.
Yep.
So the texture is affected. And a lot of times the cake might collapse.
Got it.
The structure
so
will
visually,
not be
sound. The structure it won't work without a cake without sugar. But I'm a consumer. I just care about whether the cake tastes good, right?
Exactly.
So right now I have orange, let me just go back to the microphone. I have orange chiffon cake. You see, it's not collapsing. Right, it looks like a very normal chiffon cake, but what's very interesting is it says there no sugar, so I'm gonna taste it. It's sweet.
So it still tastes like the regular chiffon cake, and then the texture is still soft, it's still moist, even though it has no sugar in it.
No sugar.
There's no sugar in it.
Okay, guys, I swear to you. Okay, this is not a sponsored interview, right? I love sweet stuff. Man. Anybody who knows me, I know I like sweet stuff. Recently, I just had a cheesecake on my own, whole big cheesecake on my own. Yeah, oh my God, so dangerous. You know, Alan just rolled his eye at me. And okay, I have to say this orange chiffon cake tastes really sweet.
Mm.
Like a normal cake, like but there's no sugar in it.
Exactly.
But it's because he added some magic additive, Alchemy Fiber.
Yeah, so this magic ingredient, you know, of course, it's called Alchemy Fiber. We developed a special blend that's used in cakes.
Mm.
And what's special about this blend is that it also empowers the cake to be made with sweeteners, natural sweeteners. In this case, we use maltitol. Instead of a regular sugar that will spike your blood sugar levels.
Yeah,
and the key thing that made it really challenging for any bakers who will try to use sweeteners, again, the taste and the texture.
Yeah.
So we have made that happen with Sui Hing.
This is so cool, guys. So, okay, how do we know? I mean, it is in Singapore for now, right? Those of you listening to us, because we are in 5 other countries, but at least for my Singapore friends, right, listeners, how do we know if our food has the Alchemy Fiber in it?
So if you were to say patronage one of our restaurant partners, you would see our logo, our heart shape. It says made with Alchemy Fiber on the menus. And then sometimes there's also posters like for Sui Hing, their bakery. So they have the label on the packaging. As you can see, the red heart on the label.
Yeah, made with Alchemy Fiber. And exactly. It says low GI, high fiber, high prebiotics.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
same great taste.
In a way, you can look at us like an Intel Insight to many of these food brands. You know, just that we power their products to be healthier, but without changing the taste.
I love that. Actually, that would be a great way to introduce yourself in future. Like, we make you enjoy the food without the bad effects of it,
exactly.
Without changing the taste.
So that's all that we do.
Thank you so much.
The essence of what we do.
Okay, before we go into the marketing part, right? Let's go back to, we're still on a science, right?
Yeah.
You shocked me by saying that there is more diabetic patients than Amazon users. How do we know? So we don't talk about those people, okay? But you said that there were a lot of pre-diabetic patients, right? People like us.
Yeah.
And I remember in an interview, you said that these people are getting younger and younger because I used to think that diabetes is for old people, right? Mm-hmm. Is that still true?
They still make out the bulk of the population, but the fastest growing band are the people who are between 30 to 40 years old, which is basically us. And I think, and the dangerous thing about diabetes is that at the initial phase, you don't really experience anything. So that's why he has caught a lot of people by surprise. If you go for regular checkups, that's where the red flags might come. But if you don't, you know, you're probably going to get a diabetic stage where you first discover that you have it.
Got it. So the checkup, you're talking about the blood sugar, yeah, right? The doctor will tell you about your blood sugar. Are there any other telltale signs? I mean, besides us going for a medical checkup, which we should, are there any telltale signs to know?
Some other common telltale signs of diabetes include things like frequent urination. So why that happens is because your body is trying to frantically get rid of the glucose that's all stuck in your blood. And then there are other telltale signs as well, like chronic fatigue. If you feel tired the entire time, you know, it could mean that you are
even
diabetic as
well.
Even if you sleep enough. And also if you start to notice that your wounds don't heal or clot as quickly as before, it probably might mean that you are at risk of diabetes. It doesn't immediately mean that you're diabetic, but you know, it's one of those red flags.
Possible red flags.
It's a possible red flag. But when it gets to that stage, you know, that kind of symptoms, you know, you're pretty much diabetic already.
And of course, if you are a carbs person, like if you're a carbs or dessert person, like I'm a rice person, I love noodles, you know, I love cakes and sweet stuff. I think that's something we need to take note of. Well, thanks for that, man. Thanks, Alan. Well, this is amazing. You're the first food tech entrepreneur I've ever interviewed. And it's very cool that your success isn't just about you making more money, but your success actually allows us to be healthier. I could almost say that your success is our miracle, you know?
I mean, for us, we're a mission-driven startup. The whole point is to create impact in people's health, and people have started enjoying better health. They've written to several testimonials. I think the business performance is more like a byproduct. If we do well financially, it's because we have done enough impact.
Exactly. I always believe that the money that you make is the market's feedback of your value.
Exactly.
If you're making a lot of money, it means that the market believes that you're giving them a lot of value.
Exactly.
So if you want to make more money, give more value.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Hey, this is Eric here, just dropping in to check in on you. Are you getting value so far from this interview? Because if you are, I'm very happy for you. And I'm really curious to know what are some of the key takeaways. So after the interview, go to social media, screenshot your learnings and tag me, all right? So that we can connect. Okay. I'm going to leave you to listen to the rest of the interview. Enjoy. Okay, now let's go to marketing, okay? You had an awesome product. You took about 3 years, right? Incubating and doing
research,
the research.
Clinical studies.
And when you officially started to roll it out to the public?
We only roll out our products in 2020. That's last year. So it's only slightly more than a year.
But it was the pandemic year. Was that positive thing for you or negative thing for you?
Extremely challenging.
Okay, tell us all about
it. So our first wave of rollout was meant to be the restaurant partners, and it still is. Because I think through restaurant partners, there's a lot of show and tell opportunities when it's on the menus. And then also when restaurants tend to have a shorter turnaround time. So it's easier to roll out speed to market. And then with restaurants, we have ability to roll out many different dishes from rice-based ones to noodle-based, bread-based items. So there's a lot of storytelling opportunities. So that's what we chose. So we had originally wanted to have official launch in May of last year. And if you recall, May or last year was in the middle of
exactly,
circuit breaker.
Yes.
Yeah. So we had it all planned since January and February. We had the venue planned. We had restaurant partners planned. Minister secured. Everything was done. Even the press was secured. You know, 3 months in advance, that we're going to have this event. You know, come and cover it. Everyone's RSVP. You know, we're going to come and talk about this great product launch. And then COVID hit, right? And then at that point in time, a lot of our restaurant partners were food service guys that depended quite heavily on tourism.
Exactly.
And as well as events. So when COVID happened, you know, they're in this area, and when it hits our clients, we are hit, right? So all of a sudden we had to pivot. We had to ensure that we start to think, okay, you know, food is something you have to eat no matter what. Even with a pandemic, you've got to eat, but maybe you eat at a different place or maybe you buy a different type of food. So then we had to pivot, right? And look for clients in the restaurant scene, in the food service scene, whose food tends to travel well. So people are more inclined to order. Casual dining as well, because I think people are still willing to spend on casual dining. Fine dining, I think it depends. Some people feel that they still want to pay that amount only when they get to enjoy the ambience. So that is a half and half, but some people still spend. But the clearer, the more clear-cut prospects to go after will be those that are going for mass premium, food that travels well. And hence, we had to suddenly overnight pivot our strategy.
Yeah.
And who we prioritize as our key partnerships.
And that's how the bread thing come about, right? Because bread travels well. Is that
bread
how you
travels
came about?
Well, cake travels well. Chicken rice travels well for sure. Duck rice as well. So a lot of these items, you know, the daily food items, you know, was what we ended up concentrating on.
That's so freaking cool. Got it. So that's how it happens. You know, I remember you mentioned before, we chatted about it, that as an entrepreneur, you can almost say that it can be quite a lonely journey, right?
Oh.
and do you think so? Even though you brought so much joy to people, but has it been a very lonely journey? And on his LinkedIn, he actually wrote he's a CEO, which is chief of everything officer.
It still feels that way.
Pakalea, right? Pakalea means do everything.
Well, the team has expanded. Just over, I think 18 or 24 months ago, it was like maybe 6 of us. Now it's 18 of us.
Wow.
Next year, I think it will be 25. So within a space of like two years or 2+ years, you know, the team has grown like, you know, 4 to 5 folds. Yeah. So even then, you're still a very tight team, you know, so many people are still across multitasking.
Mm.
Yeah. But I think all entrepreneurs out there will feel some degree of loneliness, I believe. I think at the start, the loneliness was the highest. Also because, you know, you have this great idea, you have this great passion, you want to get started, but not many people believe in you yet.
Was it true? I mean, I thought you were a first hit. You hit it.
Yeah,
go right at the
beginning. So we had a support from the Singapore government, but on the private sector side, it was very challenging. So if we backtrack right to the stage where we were trying to prove this technology.
Correct.
We got the grant, we passed the clinical studies, proven that it worked. We went to pitch to private investors. Many of them were skeptical, you know, also because at that point in time, food tech was not a known vertical. So when we said introduce ourselves as a food tech startup, they said, so you have a website to order food. So there was a general misconception or a misunderstanding of what food tech is. And then some of them felt that, you know, food, there's no tech. It tastes good, you sell. It will sell, you know, there's no tech. So it was only after a while that they really understood it. And when we pitched the story on, you know, diabetes is a key problem, you know, we have a solution for it. There are also some investors who are not so well-versed with the problem. Some of them felt that we were making up the problem. They don't believe that diabetes is such a big problem, even though our statistic came from like the International Diabetes Correct. Federation. All those are validated facts,
and
right?
They don't believe.
And they don't believe. And then some of them feel that, you know, this will result in a product that's slightly more expensive. You know what? Only the rich people will be able to afford, and rich people don't eat rice. You know, there's a lot of things that we felt were not justified reasons. But then, you know, skepticism is something that comes to all early stage entrepreneurs. So at a point in time, you know, very lonely, you know, you feel that nobody believes in you.
Oh God.
Your team is very small. You know, it's basically just you and your co-founder. What are you going to do? You know, you have this great idea. You know that, you know, once this scales, you know, it creates impact for people. But right now, day one, nobody believes in you. What happens?
How do you overcome that?
So we pivoted even our pitch at a point in time in our first round of VC funding. We pitched this as a healthcare startup because we are bringing about better blood sugar levels. And then for the patients, for the regular people who are trying to prevent diabetes. So this is indeed a healthcare startup at a stage. And then we got funded because of that. So I think one of the key skills I think all entrepreneurs need to have is to be able to pivot always the situation, be it COVID or be it that your vertical could be early, but there are other ways to sell this product. We still have to do it. And then when we got funded, we then continue our development work and more into the application side where we really get this into everyday foods, the rice, the chicken rice, especially in the cooking, the cakes, which cake, you know, chiffon cake, you know, different sponge cakes are different. Even on a bread, you know, brioche versus, you know, your regular loaf breads, all those are different. So we then spend the money to do a lot of this, all this application research and got all the samples done. And then very excited, we brought this to the industry, we shared with partners, right? And then the partners all look at us like, you know, you guys look very young. If we're in the food industry, this thing eat already will die or not. You know, in the long term, like, you know, how do we know it's safe? You know, when you say it works, how do we know? And then we had to show them that, you know, we're funded by Singapore government. You know, ministers like PM Lee as well as DPM Heng Swee Keat has spoken about this. Clinical studies obviously show that it works. You know, we have also gotten our patents granted. To date, right now, we have gotten about 17 countries granted already. And then there are already many other brands that really committed interest to want to get started. But a lot of times it's getting the first yes that's extremely challenging.
That's right.
Yeah. So when we got those challenges and questions thrown to us, you can feel that, you know, the gate was completely shut. So bit by bit, we got to find out what are their concerns. You know, do you think it's safe? Okay, these are the certs. You know, do you think it works? These are clinical studies. Who else is backing you? We're backed by the government. You know, do my customers really want this? You know what? You know, we showed a statistic that, you know, rice in particular, volume has been falling, even though people love eating rice. And it's really because people getting concerned.
Because of the healthcare advice that people say, right? Yeah. That rice is bad, so eat less. But actually, we want to eat.
Yeah, people want to eat. And what we always find is that people stay off rice for maybe 3 weeks, 1 month, maximum 2 months. By the third month, they're back.
Yep.
So it's not a sustainable, you know, solution to get people to cut completely.
So what I'm hearing from you is that you had a very big win with the Singapore government, the Singapore enterprise, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. That was your big win that got you
the
started,
first big
right?
Win, yeah.
But then after that, it was a series of no's. Your round one investing was a no.
And then we pitched and then we pivoted the pitch and then it was a
and
yes.
And it was a yes.
And then we get closer to the market and then no from the market again. And then we pivot and then we try to get some trust. Once you get the first big yes, then you get a second big yes and then a third one.
Got it. Yeah. So the question is, how do we persevere through all the no's until we get a yes, right? You remember there's this picture of these two guys digging goal, and then one of them was so close to hitting goal, but he gave up because he had, you know, he hit nothing, right, for a long time.
So anytime that I feel discouraged, I always go back to, you know, what many people call the first principles, you know, the absolute truth of life and universe, right? The absolute truth is that diabetes problem exists. People want tasty, healthy foods. There's no good solution. That's the first principle that always keep me going, because we already have developed the solution. It's about making the partners see that this is a core need, that people are really calling for it. You may not know about it because they may not go up to your face and tell you that can you make your food healthier. But when you start seeing, you know, the rice volume fall, when you start seeing people, you know, signing up for gyms, when people start talking about, you know, what they're putting into their bodies, you know that a health trend is there.
Yeah.
It's very, very strong. So I think it's about also making your point visible to be more convincing to your partners. And then eventually they will see that there's reasons for them to take on this product.
So two things I'm learning from you. So number one is whenever we get our no's, we always go back to first principles, or we go back to the why we're doing this.
Exactly.
Right? I think there was one famous guy who said that, right? What's his name? Simon Sinek. Right, he says about the why. So there's a saying, right? When the why is big enough, you figure out the what and the how.
Exactly. So we started from the why.
Started from the why. And the second one is to look at every objection as an investment, as a pitch objective, right? That if people are telling me that, oh, I don't think the food is going to taste good, then that becomes my objective. I'm going to prove to you that my food is going to taste equally good.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, everybody wants something. The young consumer wants to enjoy food, but escape the guilt and the health implications. Whereas the B2B partners, they want to boost their business, right? So we also learn that, you know, through our work with our B2B partners. So other than telling them that your consumers want this, we have to also go through the matrix with them of, like, when you use this, how much more volume you're going to get, how much more business you're going to get. You're going to get stronger recall. You're going to get increase in margins and volumes. You know, it makes sense for you to do it. And then on the PR side of things, you look like a brand that cares for your customers.
Very well said. That's the saying, right? To sell Jindo, what Jindo want, you need to first see from the eyes of Jindo, right? Mm-hmm. And so learning how to see from the eyes of your different stakeholders help you make your pitch a lot more convincing. can I ask, like, you know, it has been what, 5 years?
5 years now, yeah.
And would you say you're
6 years actually.
6 years. 6 years turning now, six soon?
No, well, we turned six in October.
It's already 6 years?
Yeah, so wow. 6 years and 2 months now.
Wow. It felt like a while because I know you only recently, so I only know you this year. So it felt like it was just a while ago. What do you think is your next big challenge and milestone?
I think our next big challenge is to onboard the truly international brands, and we already have those in our pipelines. Some of the pipeline partners we have are true MNCs, publicly listed companies. So working with them is a whole new dimension because there's a lot of red tapes, and then every product that they decide to roll out is multi-geographies, right? So I think there's always a lot of considerations. Then there's a lot of checks that, you know, they do conduct on their partners before they take on any new projects. So, you know, in terms of us, you know, getting a back-end work, you know, the production capacity, you know, the qualities, you know, all those things are, we are already having them in place. So for example, we just got ISO certified.
Yay.
And of course, you know, we're HALA certified, you know, and the SFA certs, the FSSAI certs, you know, all those things, we have already gotten the back-end work done. So I think that's the next wave of challenge. And also to expand our application into more food categories. Because right now, we focus on everything carb. So staples is our number one game, but we have also developed an application for other foods. So for example, it was recently announced in the press that we have developed a bubble tea pearl that's made with alkaline fiber. So it has the ability to increase the fiber content and intake for you in the drink. And then it can also potentially slow down the sugar release, you know, from the sugar drinks.
I tell you, everybody's going to love you, you know. You're going to be every foodie's best friend because you'll just make all your favorite food healthy.
Yeah, so that they can consume and have a peace of mind.
My last question for you. I mean, obviously you had a great idea, right? And you had the support of the government, and you have grit, persistence, and you have a very strong, compelling backstory of why you want to do this. Like, even if no one support you, you'll still do it because you had a very big why. You can see that in your eyes. So you'll find a way. There are a lot of other entrepreneurs who may not have the great idea. They may not have an idea that can save lives or change the world. What do you have to say about them when they go out there and pitch those ideas that might not be the best? Should they just give up because their ideas are not good? Or what?
I think if you don't feel strongly about the idea, you should give up. Because the truth is that I think with all entrepreneurs and in all verticals, you're going to get a lot of no's. And even after you get your first yes, you're going to get a series of no's before you get your next yes. And we are still getting some no's now. And I believe for every single company out there, it's the same. So I think what keeps us going is really believing that this is the right thing to do. And for us, going back to first principles, you know, people need this, right? You know, and people really do want this. And hence, we are creating it and making it available. So I think tying this back also to ensure that you are working on a problem that's huge enough.
Yes.
Yeah, that can create a big enough impact would then result in a compelling business case that's investable.
Wow, you have a very good point. I remember going for a business networking event before and there were a lot of young people say, I want to be an entrepreneur because nowadays it's very cool to be an entrepreneur, right? Everybody wants to be an entrepreneur, but we do not have a great idea.
Yeah.
And this very established entrepreneur said that if you want to find a great idea, first find a big enough problem
exactly.
that you are excited to solve and that you have the resources and capabilities to solve.
Yes, exactly.
And then when you combine that together, then you have a good enough investable idea.
When you solve big problems, you have more help from NGOs, from the governments, you have more opportunities to get funding from private sector because there's more impact to be driven. And once you deliver the impact, the profits come. When you solve a small problem, there's not enough people who care. You're not going to get help. You're alone.
Alan, this is very important to me because a few years ago, I was plateauing and I was just wondering like, what's going on? Like, why am I not excited anymore about what I do? And I don't seem to, you know, be able to get the attention that I want, right? And someone said that to me as well. He said to me that you need to start stepping up and to solve bigger problems because the minute you open your mouth and if let's say you say, oh, my goal is to, you know, be a person of influence, to grow my TikTok following, let's say, right? That's not my goal, by the way. Who's going to help you?
Yeah. Who cares?
Who cares about you being famous?
It's a very vanity.
Exactly. And so you're not going to attract smart people to you, you know, because smart, talented people want to work for a cause. They want to work for meaningful things. Do you know Tesla is not the only company that does the energy cars? No.
They're not the first
either. But guess what? The best engineers, the smartest, most talented engineers want to work for him, Elon Musk. Why? Not because of Elon Musk, but because of Elon Musk's goal and vision and wanting to, you know, create, colonize Mars. It's exciting enough. Doesn't matter if you achieve it.
Yeah.
But if I want to do something, must also do something big, right?
So today in our team hires, like permanent staff, you know, we have people who are ex-Nestle's and key appointment holders. We have people who are ex-Health Promotion Board, ex-BreadTalk, you know, people have come in from all walks of life. And then in our board of advisors, you know, we have ex-MD of Kellogg's, for example. So why do these people spend time with advisors? Yes. Not for the money. They already have enough money.
Yes.
So they are doing this really because they realize there's a strong need. There's going to be a tremendous impact, you know, to be achieved once we roll this out at a big scale. So that's primarily what drives them, you know. Otherwise, you know, these are people who can retire, you know, but they're spending time with us because they believe in the mission.
Alan, this is beautiful. And I truly, truly, deeply wish you success. And I hope to see your heart, the big red heart that says Alchemy Fiber in everything that we like to eat. All right, so guys, you know what? I got this crazy idea. Those of you listening to podcasts, go watch the YouTube video instead. Those of you watching on YouTube, put down your favorite food as I ask you right at the beginning of this episode. And please, Alan, go have a look at all your favorite food. And please do something about it and alchemy. I don't know what you do, but just add your alchemy magic into those food. Make it taste equally good, if not better. But yeah, make it healthy. Could you do that for us?
That's all we live to do.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Alan. And really appreciate you being here with us today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Wish you success, man. High five. Let's finish the chiffon cake together. If you love this episode, remember to hit the follow button on Spotify or the plus button on Apple Podcasts.
Hashtag highly sought after.